What's the biggest misconception about homelessness here in Australia?
People see the face of homelessness in Australia as people who are sleeping rough. That's a real myth because 94% of homelessness in Australia is hidden homelessness. And by that I mean people who may be couch surfing between their friends' or family's houses, people who are in short-term unsuitable accommodation, people who are living short-term in motels. So they've got nowhere to go, but you actually can't see them. So that's one of the biggest myths. And I think one of the other ones is that you've somehow created the problem yourself, that because of what you did in your life, you created this. And that's wrong because there are so many different pathways into homelessness, and most of them we've got no control over. So there's some really key things. Sarah is 72 years old. So she was a grandmother, like the age of someone's grandmother. And for the very first time in her life, she found herself homeless. For Sarah, she worked all of her life, but it was a low-paying job. So she didn't have a lot of savings. She didn't have super. And she had been living in her apartment for 10 years. And the landlord said, actually, you need to vacate. Very difficult to find a place to live. She found share accommodation, but the person that she was sharing with ended up being violent. So she ended up living in her car, and her car was parked in church grounds. This is a lady in Queensland. And so that was her pathway to becoming homeless. Over the last couple of decades, governments of all different types, whether they're Liberal, Labor, Coalition, whatever it is, local right through to federal government, there's been a complete underinvestment in social and affordable housing. And the latest estimates are that to keep up with demand over the next two decades, we need nearly 1 million new homes. So it's great for people to come to places like Mission Australia, and we do all we can to help them. But the fact is, if you're going to end homelessness, you actually have to have a supply of homes. Right, you don't need to be Einstein to figure that out. But funnily enough, some people haven't been able to. And if we want to be the Australia that we all think that we should be, we need to do something about it because it's a real crisis at the moment.
G'day, thanks so much for being here. If you would like to get notified about brand new episodes, get access to live gigs and events before anybody else, and read things that are not included in the main podcast, you can subscribe to the newsletter. We have a newsletter. It's at oshaginsburg.com. Now, before we get to the wonderful Sharon Callister, podcasts are free to listen to, but they are not free to make. So in the interests of paying the very best people we can find to do the very best work they can do, we are going to play you some ads. G'day, it's Oshie Ginsburg. This is Better Than Yesterday. Just trying to make it better every single episode since 2013. I'm Oshie Ginsburg. I'm a podcaster. I'm an author. I'm a TV host. I'm a dad. I'm a stepdad. I'm a cargo bicycle rider in the rain. Someone who I'll admit right now, I use performance enhancers at the gym. Yes, I do. I listen to a band called High on Fire when it's deadlift day. And if you're having trouble getting your deadlifts off the ground, that will do the job. Snakes for the Divine. That's the secret sauce. Beats any pre-workout you can get over the counter. Tickets are selling wonderfully well for our live gigs at the Melbourne International Comedy Festival. I wouldn't want you to miss out. So thanks to everyone that's getting on board. That links are in the show notes. Get on it quick, Sticks. We're on pretty late. It's like 9:30. So go see your headliners in Melbourne and then come see us for your lucification after late night scenario. It'll be a lot of fun. Today, we're talking with Sharon Callister. Sharon is the CEO of Mission Australia. She is one of these rare humans that just is born to help. You cannot stop her and you will not stop her. Among the things that Sharon is focusing on in her work at Mission Australia is addressing the rather grim challenge of rising homelessness among women, particularly older women in Australia. Now, in this conversation, you might be a bit confronted by some of the misconceptions about homelessness in our country. Sharon does share some pretty intense stories of people she's worked with who have experienced homelessness and the challenges that they face. Helping an individual person is very important. However, that is at the end of the day, it's treating a symptom and not a cause. So Sharon also has a lot to say about the need for investment in social and affordable housing and how much power an early intervention can have. We do talk about domestic and family violence and the role of education in changing attitudes and behaviours. So that is on the way. Now, it does sound grim, but I promise you, this is actually a conversation full of hope. It really is. Enjoy this chat with Sharon Callister. Thanks for coming today. Are you exhausted from your exposure to 96,599 other Taylor Swift fans?
I think I was probably energised from 96,000 Taylor Swift fans.
Whether you like her music or not, it's undeniable that this is a cornerstone cultural moment. 96,000 people in a stadium, I don't care who you are, you two can't do that right now. You two couldn't sell out the MCG.
Yeah, and I think for me what was really interesting is that it wasn't that she just sold out the MCG on one night. She sold it out three nights in a row. And I'm pretty sure that if she'd wanted to play for a week there, she would have sold it out for seven nights as well. There was just, in terms of trying to get tickets, it was unbelievable. And so she's just like this phenomena that we've never seen before.
We talk on the show a lot about you can't be what you can't see. She has been quite successful, and she cops a bit of shit for, well, her parents had money. But what do you expect? Yep. You know, so unless it's a rags to riches story, you're not allowed to do anything.
Yeah, that's, you're not interested.
That's not okay.
It's not okay. Actually, it's not. And just, you know, she can't help who she was born to, if you like, or what family. But for her, it's actually not just the privilege of the family that she was born into. My understanding is that, you know, she is one of the hardest working.
Oh, yeah.
It's not just her gifts. She works really hard and she's a very generous person as well. So, again, what's not to love about her?
Someone who likes hard work, you've gone, you know what? I'm going to be a registered nurse. It's not like, I like the idea of like, 10 straight hours of looking after way too many patients who might die at any moment.
Or working in the operating theatres. That's one area that I specialised in when I was in my much younger years as an operating room nurse. And that is one full-on role right there, especially when you're working in a public hospital, because you might have your day all planned about you're going to be doing this, 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 and this, and it'll take sort of all day. And then all of a sudden you'll get an emergency through the door and you've got to be totally switched on, ready to kick into a different gear. Really rewarding. Nursing is a great career. It's one where you give back as well, but it's also pretty hard on your body. So you need to be, well, certainly when I was doing the roles that I was doing, had to be very fit. So it was a great start, I think, coming out of school because, you know, school, you're running around, you're in the playground, you're doing sports all the time.
Many of us have those stubborn pounds that seem impossible to lose, no matter how good we eat or how hard we work out. My solution is PlushCare. PlushCare is a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. They can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Plus, they accept most insurance plans. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss.
Quality sleep is essential. That's why the Sleep Number Smart Bed is designed for your ever-evolving sleep needs. Need a bed that's firmer or softer on either side? Helps you sleep at a comfortable temperature? Sleep Number Smart Beds let you individualize your comfort, so you sleep better together. J.D. Power ranks Sleep Number number one in customer satisfaction with mattresses purchased in-store. And now, save 40% on the Sleep Number Limited Edition smart bed for a limited time. For J.D. Power 2023 award information, visit jdpower.com/awards. Only at Sleep Number stores or sleepnumber.com.
You know how to book flights and hotels. All you're missing is a tool to plan the travel experiences you'll have once you arrive. That's why you need Viator. Book guided tours, activities, excursions, and more in one place to make your trip truly unforgettable. Viator has over 300,000 travel experiences to choose from. Everything from simple tours to extreme adventures and all the niche, interesting stuff in between. So you can plan something that everyone you're traveling with will enjoy. Real traveler reviews give the inside scoop from people who've already been on the experiences you're considering, so you can plan with confidence. Free cancellation helps you plan for the unexpected, and 24/7 customer support means you can travel worry-free. Download the Viator app now and use code Viator10 for 10% off your first booking in the app. Find travel experiences for you. Do more with Viator.
But it was also for me starting to sort of form the kind of person that I wanted to become and the types of work that I would pursue. And it really taught me about caring for people, in addition to all of these lifestyle changes and adaptations that I was making sort of out of school.
So you were, I'm wondering, like, was it kind of like 80s, 90s that you were working as an RN at St. Vincent's?
Yeah, it was.
So for people, St. Vincent's is in Darlinghurst in Sydney. Mm. It is at the top of the hill of Oxford Street. If you've ever watched the Mardi Gras parade where they all turn right and they go, hooray! About 100 metres further up on the left is this hospital.
Yes.
So definitely in the 80s, wild time to be in healthcare, because in the 80s there was a disease that was going around and it was just decimating the community of people that lived in that area, and governments around the world had literally no idea what it was, how it came, how it spread. That just that news, like, people were dying everywhere. The Sacred Heart Hospice, which is right next door to St. Vincent's.
Part of the Sisters of Charity.
I think it's like 40 beds
I'm not sure what it would be now, but it was fairly small.
It's not a lot of beds. I heard that at some point in like 83 or 82 or something like that, this is a 40-bed hospice, which is that's your last stop.
That's it.
All right, hospice is, we're going to move you next door and your friends and family can come see you, and that's where you'll...
But you're not going to be going.
You're not going to, no, you won't check out. 40 beds, there was something like 112 people there. They had people in the hallways. People just,
I know,
young
terrible
men
time.
Dying.
I recall even from my time working in operating theatres, and we got our first few HIV positive patients coming through, and the dramas that it was causing, because it was new. It was this whole new disease that we'd never really knew much about, and there were a lot of negative stereotypes around it at the time, and more so I think just such a lack of understanding.
Yeah.
But I think St. Vincent's, and I don't know if it was because it was a Catholic hospital run by Sisters of Charity, they did their very best to make the lives of people who were HIV positive more bearable, more tolerable. And it wasn't, you know, as a public hospital, you didn't always go to theatres for an elective surgery case.
Yeah.
We had to be prepared for all of those things. And it's just bringing me back, even having this conversation, something that has changed so much over the years and prognoses being so much better than they were. But right back at that stage, it was, St. Vincent's, Sacred Heart Hospice, all in Darlinghurst, right at the centre.
With no protocols of like, what do we do? A needle stick could kill you. Dead.
That's right.
So how do we then give an injection to someone?
Are we scared?
Who needs it, keeping me safe? Like all these things now, if you ever get your blood taken or you get whatever, there's all the protocols that they do now are because of that time.
Yeah.
And it's extraordinary. Like, yes, the world is on fire and at war, It is. And it was also that in 1981, 82.
Mm.
And yet, so many outcomes for so many people all over the world are so much better. Like, if you are HIV positive in 82, 83, whatever, death sentence. I'm sorry.
Yeah,
there's nothing we can do for you. Now, if you have the means, if you're in a country that can support you, you can take PrEP every day and live cranky person.
Yeah, it's just like us.
Astounding in my lifetime that has happened. I know the guy that wrote the Grim Reaper commercial.
Wow, do you?
Yeah.
Wow. Well, when you're talking about that, I'm thinking also of Bryce Courtney's April Fool's Day and just how his son was treated when he was HIV positive, and that was from a blood transfusion, which incidentally, when I moved working from St. Vincent's, I actually went and worked for, those days it was called the New South Wales Blood Transfusion Service.
What we know is the blood bank.
And now Australian Red Cross Life Blood,
something
like
that.
And just, again, it was all tied into that era of HIV and AIDS and how it was communicated, how it was treated, stereotypes. It was so tragic in so many ways. But like you said, you know, some 30, 40 years on, it's a disease where it's so livable, and infection control protocols are such that we have universal precautions for whatever may
You know, it's so wild, the drumming into people about having at least a layer of latex between you and your lover. That is like, there's syphilis outbreaks because people are having unprotected sex because you can no longer just die, their friends don't die. It's syphilis. What is it, a Dickens novel? What are we, like, come on. So there's a couple of things that you said there that I'm very interested to know. Your day-to-day job is dealing with people who are at the absolute most critical, most dangerous, vulnerable point in their lives every day. How do you steel yourself to show up in the morning, and how do you make sure you can connect with people you love at night?
Well, it's a good question, a big question. I think for me, if I go back to my early days when I was nursing, and that was all about being caring for people, but also for being grateful for what I have. And so my progression through the years has very much been about that. So, you know, I used to think, wow, if I'd gone out and worked for a big corporate organization, I could have earned gazillions of dollars, but I would have had no purpose. And for me, what's kept me grounded, what gives me resilience, is not just my health, but it's also I need a reason to get out of bed in the morning. So it could be overwhelming thinking we have thousands and thousands of people who rely on Mission Australia to get through their next day. They're very vulnerable, often at their worst point in life. So that could be quite overwhelming to think about. But for me, I kind of, you're talking about reverse engineering. For me, it's like, well, that's giving me my purpose to get out of bed every day to do what I do. It's really important. I'm very passionate about it. In fact, I would say that this job that I have now as CEO of Mission Australia is the best job I've ever had in my entire life. And I've had quite a few, and I've had quite a few amazing jobs. I spent 10 years working with the Salvation Army. That was incredible as well. So for me, it's not a burden. It's I see people who are at a point in time, they're living their worst lives. And many of them, it's through no fault of their own. And we're just here to help. So we are a national Christian charity, and we operate right across Australia. And we, last year, I think we provided about care and support to 150,000 people over like 463 different types of programs. And at home, when I go home at night, I just sit and reflect on that. And I think, how did I get to be in such a position where I could influence that? And so I don't have trouble when I go home. I just sit there and I feel grateful, and I'll talk to my husband or our son about some of the amazing things that have happened today, or some of the incredible stories that I've heard of people who we've actually helped and changed their lives. You know, we've got a vision at Mission Australia, and it's where we can end homelessness. But it's not just about that. It's helping people and communities in need to thrive. I don't think you can just say everyone's got a roof over their head, tick. People have a lot of complex issues that they need to deal with as well. And that's the part about communities and people thriving.
Yeah.
And so it's more an energy boost for me rather than the fact that it could be overwhelming thinking about the weight and the pressure and the expectations of people.
What's the biggest misconception about homelessness here in Australia?
There's a couple. One is that people see the face of homelessness in Australia as people who are sleeping rough. So they're the people that we can see. So people sleeping on park benches, out in open spaces. So that's a real myth because 94% of homelessness in Australia is hidden homelessness. And by that, I mean people who may be couch surfing between their friends' or family's houses, people who are in short-term unsuitable accommodation, people who are living short-term in motels. So they've got nowhere to go, but you actually can't see them. So that's one of the biggest myths. And I think one of the other ones is that you've somehow created the problem yourself, that because of what you did in your life, you created this. And that's wrong, because there are so many different pathways into homelessness. And most of them we've got no control over. So there's some really key things.
Can you explain what one of those pathways might look like? Because there, another, I guess another misconception, and I guess this is the one that I saw a lot of when I was living in America, is, well, they don't have a public health system like we do. So it's a lot of like really raw, volatile, untreated mental illness, people who need a lot of help living out on the street because they've got nowhere else to go and they can't be around other humans. It's really, really difficult. That, I think, is also one of the misconceptions here is that, a crazy person living in the park, right? It's always a crazy person. But I'm imagining that sometimes, yes, you might have poor mental health because you are struggling and you might have some children to support and it's just you. And what's a way that someone can just find themselves homeless and what's a timeline look like?
There are 122,000 people homeless in Australia, according to the last census in 2021. And there's probably 122,000 different reasons on why they're homeless. But I can talk to you about a few case histories. I won't obviously use people's names, but I'll talk about Sarah first. Sarah is 72 years old or was 72 years old. So she was a grandmother, like the age of someone's grandmother. And for the very first time in her life, she found herself homeless. And you think, how can you get to 72, have led this life where you've been gainfully employed, and then suddenly you don't have a home? So for Sarah, she worked all of her life, but it was a low-paying job. So she didn't have a lot of savings. She didn't have super. And unless you've been living under a rock for the last few years, you'd be well aware of the huge cost of living crisis right across Australia. So whether that's been, if you were lucky enough to own a home, increases in interest rates, massive increases in rent, utilities, food, things becoming completely unaffordable. So she's barely hanging on. And she had been living in her apartment for 10 years. And the landlord said, actually, you need to vacate because I've sold the block and it's being bulldozed and we're going to be making some, building some luxury apartments. It didn't really matter what it was. She just didn't have a home anymore. So she looked around and not a lot of money, very difficult to find a place to live. She found share accommodation, but the person that she was sharing with ended up being violent. So she had to leave there, a succession of these really tragic circumstances. So she ended up living in her car and her car was parked in church grounds. This is a lady in Queensland. And so that was her pathway to becoming homeless. She connected with the police who ended up connecting her with Mission Australia. And this is about 3 years ago now. We were able to help her and we were able to help her find stable housing. And she hasn't looked back since. But that's one pathway.
Well, how about women and men compare in homelessness in Australia?
Women are the majority. Women and girls are the majority of people who are homeless in Australia. Yeah, but there's plenty of men, like in that 122,000, there are still quite a group of men, obviously, but women and girls. And there's particular reasons for that in terms of they're overwhelmingly more likely to be in part-time jobs. They're more likely to have the lowest paid jobs. They're more likely to be the primary carer for children. And all of those things lead to lower savings, lower super, and you can sort of see the the cycle from there.
If you're splitting a paycheck that's already 70-something percent of,
The latest figures from the Workplace Gender Equality Agency, and they're doing more and more in terms of wage surveys in the hope that we will, or in the plan it should be, to have wage equality in Australia with men and women. At the moment, there is a 21% gap, their most recent study. So that means for every dollar a man earns in Australia, a woman earns 78 cents.
And that man, yes, the end of patriarchy, et cetera. But generally—
And these are more likely
a man will leave.
Not every single person.
A man will leave and a woman will stay and care with the children or leave. The woman will leave to keep herself and the children safe and care for the children. So they're splitting that already. Paltry 79 cents, and because their career may have had a break because of childbearing and rearing and stuff, that paycheck's going to be lower than the, you know, maybe the father of the kids. Then they're splitting it three ways, you know?
And it's not a lot there.
It's not a lot, not a lot left.
That's right.
Yeah.
So another example of This time we'll call her Natalie. And I'm particularly using women because we are coming up to International Women's Day. So I think it's a great time to highlight the plight of women as well with Natalie.
Yeah.
So she was married. I was going to say happily married, but clearly, as I tell the story, she wasn't.
Yeah.
Her marriage broke down. So she's gone from having the security of a husband with two young kids to not having that. And the pressure of that also, she did experience significant mental health issues. So then that led to the fact that she was trying to look after two children. She was trying to hold down a job. She just couldn't juggle all the balls in the air at the one time. And so she lost her job. That's how she found her way to Mission Australia. So you can look at, this is why I'm talking about the fact that often it's not your fault. The circumstances are out of your control. So you've gone from having this emotional stability, family stability, all that's ripped out. And then obviously the challenges then go from there, you know, mental health challenges that she had. But again, that was for her, you can't call it a happy ending when you've had a family breakdown.
Yeah.
But to be able to help her at Mission Australia with her mental health issues, with helping her find accommodation and to be able to get her life back on track, that's the kind of things that we do in Mission Australia, whether it's trying to provide housing, we are a community housing provider, or whether it's through community services. And you often hear people talk about wraparound services. And basically what that means, there's supports available for people. So when, if you were to come to Mission Australia trying to get help, we would case manage you. And that means we would basically, you would have a person that would sit down, they would go through all of your circumstances, your life circumstances, and see what are the things that actually you need that we can help you with to get your life back on track and to help you from this really vulnerable position to being a whole member of the community again.
It can, if you have to move house for whatever reason and then for whatever reason you haven't managed to put a forwarding address or whatever, you far out, you run through a red light, you don't get the letter, they don't find you, next thing you know, you don't realise it, and your rego's gone because you're too busy thinking about everything else. You get pulled over by someone because your license plate's now flagged. You've got a ticket, outstanding ticket from 9 months ago. You're driving an unregistered vehicle. You've got $1,500 in fines. You've got $200 in the bank. What? You know, that's what happens.
Okay. And, you know, this is, it's such a tragedy.
Yeah.
What we find, the sooner that you can reach out to people when you're in those situations, but some of the things that you're describing about, they're the things that you actually sometimes you might not even be aware that are happening, but they're part of your life. And all of a sudden they catch up with you for whatever reason. And then you find yourself in this really vulnerable situation and position. And, you know, that is incredibly tough to be able to get out of.
There's a bloke that lives outside our library, all right, our local library. He looks like he's been there for quite a while. He's got his little camp set up. And I think generally, I don't know, but I can only assume, generally people aren't going to mess with a guy living by himself in his little tent, shopping trolley, you know, igloo thing that he's got. I'm sure he doesn't feel super safe at night, but there's a, well, I'm not going near, I don't know what can happen there. But I can't imagine that's the same for a woman alone.
And I can't either. And I think the answer is, yep, if you're a big bloke, people are going to be very much more likely to leave you alone, leave you to it. If you're not that and you're a much smaller woman, you have so many issues to deal with. You talked about safety, privacy, and just how could you even fall asleep at night? And, you know, when you're in that situation, then how can you even start about turning your life around? How can you do that? People have got lots of preconceived ideas about if you're on Job Seeker or if you're homeless, why aren't you out there working? And could you, if you put yourself in their shoes, could you imagine what's most on your mind when you start the day is not, gee, I need to get my CV ready, I need to get ready for the interview, get my dress out, whatever it is. It's not that at all. It's like, where am I going to sleep tonight that I'm going to be safe? How am I going to look after my children through the day? They're really big questions that when you are fortunate enough to have your own home and your family, that don't really cross your mind every day. And it's when the bank of mum and dad isn't there and there are no other safety nets,
yeah,
then you have a real problem, which is why we're seeing 122,000 people in Australia. And that number is increasing. In the 2016 census, it was about 116,000, 5.2% less.
Maybe it's because I've just been watching Nemesis and Joe Hockey's The Age of Entitlement is Over. It seems to be such a trope that, and there's a wild moment in the 70s where it happened. There was one particular columnist, one particular paper who used the word doll bludgers. And after that, it changed everything. It was before that. It was like, how amazing a country are we? We can take those of us who've had a hard time, we can bridge the gap until they get something better, and we can get them back and help contribute to all of us. Isn't this great? Look how much spare money we've got. Brilliant. We're awesome. And then a month later, it's talkback radio, doll bludgers, and it's
tragedy.
It's so shitty. So this idea that you are, I've been on the dole twice. I hated every single time I took that money. Hated my sense of agency, my sense of self, my sense of worth. I felt awful taking charity. You know, I was so grateful I lived in a country that could do it. And I paid I pay my taxes gratefully, knowing that I can help people who are in a similar situation. But I hated it. This idea that people, you know, do this by choice, or, for example, a woman who's left in a relationship that was emotionally or physically abusive or wasn't safe for her to be, you know, is doing this so she can get all those benefits. Like, that cannot help people's decision-making process, whether they're going to leave or not, because there's this stigma against taking entitlements and taking support.
It's so true. And it's such a tragedy that that's the preconception. And you're right. I mean, everyone's heard of the dole bludgers. But actually, if you look into the numbers, you know, you're living, if you're on JobSeeker and you're a single person, you're pretty much living in poverty.
Yeah.
Right? I think it's about $54 a day.
It's thin, man.
Now, where do you live for $54 a day in this country? I've got no idea. What we do, you asked about advocacy. We do advocate on a number of areas to government. We advocate that the job seekers should be increased to about $78 a day. It's still only about $28,000, I think. Correct me on my maths.
Yeah.
Where are you going to live for that? And Commonwealth rent assistance, if you're single, there's lots of different ways that you can calculate it, but we're talking about $184 a fortnight. So if you think for 1 minute that a single person who found themselves without a job and is trying to find one can survive on that money and get rich from the country and bleed us dry or whatever you think, you're just so wrong. And then you put into the equation, you might be a single mum with a few kids or even a couple on very low paying jobs with three kids. You're still not going to be making ends meet. And the tragedy of that is, if you want a fully functioning and vibrant community, that means everybody needs to either have a job or have some form of income so that they can all participate. And without that, you've got a bunch of people over here, and then you've got the rest of us thinking how great we are. Aren't those people terrible? And it's just not the way that, you know, in a country like Australia, we should be, and we should continue to be the lucky country. But the way that things are at the moment, it's compounded by the fact that over the last couple of decades, governments of all different types, whether they're Liberal, Labor, Coalition, whatever it is, local right through to federal government, there's been a complete underinvestment in social and affordable housing. And the latest estimates are that to keep up with demand over the next two decades, we need nearly 1 million new homes. So it's great for people to come to places like Mission Australia, and we do all we can to help them. But the fact is, if you're going to end homelessness, you actually have to have a supply of homes, right? You don't need to be Einstein to figure that out. But funnily enough, some people haven't been able to. And, you know, the government, when they came into power a couple of years ago now, they announced that they would be investing into more social and affordable housing. So they've got two programs that they've recently released, and that will have a total of 40,000 new homes being built over the next few years. And there are various state governments with initiatives. The Queensland government has one at the moment called the Housing Investment Fund. But between all of those at the moment, we're talking about 50,000 new homes. So compare that to nearly 1 million over 2 decades, we're falling so far short. So all of these people who are on welfare, if you like, and suddenly getting rich or whatever, that what we need to realise, they are living in terrible circumstances. They are incredibly vulnerable people. And if we want to be the Australia that we all think that we should be, we need to do something about it because it's a real crisis at the moment. And we need to move from crisis. We need to do more in terms of prevention, early intervention. And that's really successful. And I could talk about some of those stories that
I'd love to know, like, what are some red flags where you're able to identify, look, if we can get into this point and offer this particular program, we can, you know, we've shown that it's a good bang for buck.
Yep.
And we can head things off before we're getting in contact with the justice system or kickstart them, showing up to school and things like that.
I got some great stories on that. We did a report from January 2020, this study, until the end of 2022. So we released it kind of mid last year.
Yeah.
And it was our homelessness and housing impact support, report. And it was through all of our clients that we're seeing across Mission Australia. Many of them are in New South Wales, but in other states as well. And what it showed us that we had 50% of the people who were coming to us when they were at risk of homelessness and 50% of people were coming to us when they were already homeless. Now, when you're already homeless, we've just talked about the lack of supply, we can generally get 30% of people into maybe transitional or crisis housing and 30% maybe into longer term housing, but some of them we just can't help at all. But if people come to us before they are homeless, when they're at risk, we found that we were able to keep 94% of them, like that is almost everyone, in their homes and tenancies. And there's a variety of reasons for that. But the key message is reach out early.
Yeah.
Reach out early, come to organisations like Mission Australia, and there is so much more that we can do when you're still in your housing. And whether that's sort of to help you with rent and some vouchers, whether it's talking to your landlord, whether it's helping you with other things, other supports that you need to be able to stay in your home. To us, that was just the most important part of our research in finding that. So one of the things that we've been advocating to government recently in our pre-budget submission was we're urging the government to create a $500 million prevention transformation fund so that we can shift the dial from always being at this end when people don't have a home to doing more in terms of the investment, prevention, early intervention, because the results are just so profound. And so we need or we want government to take that up, as well as building all of the new affordable and social homes that are required as well.
That's extraordinary, 94%.
Mm-hmm.
Because then that impacts the community as well. You know, then you have kids that don't have to move schools. Mm-hmm. You know, I can only just think like the knock-on effects of a kid that has to move all the time or, you know, knowing what I know about childhood development, you know, through my own experience and, you know, watching my own kids. Like, stability is important, you know, because, you know, I'm sure our prisons are full of, you know, men and women who had unstable, you know, things happening.
Yeah.
It's the knock-on effect eventually. Mm. Like surely, when you look at I'm not going to take the humanity out of it. I don't want to take the humanity out of it whatsoever. But if you look on cost alone, the burden in the end of whether it be a massive, you know, intervention from, you know, healthcare or the justice system or a combination of many, the educational system, surely that's got to be way more than an intervention.
Absolutely. It has to be. So why is all of our time focused on crisis? Mm. It's because of this underinvestment over decades. But we've got the evidence. Yeah. We are showing this is something governments really need to take note of.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So what do you need to see? What would you like? You mentioned International Women's Day. What would you like to see change fundamentally for the way we think about homelessness and women particularly who are suffering from homelessness in Australia?
We want to see very much a continued focus on poverty and homelessness and trying to prevent both of those. They're really important to us. And we want to really focus on the workplace gender equality stuff. We want to see equality in wages for women. We haven't talked a lot about domestic and family violence, but there's a lot that I think we need to see in terms of government policy trying to influence the levers of that happening, and even advocating for more affordable childcare. These are some of the really practical things that we can do for women that are actually going to help them being or reduce them being more vulnerable and in situations. Because, you know, we talked about women leaving a violent relationship because they can get welfare, for instance. Well, the real story is if I'm a woman and I have to leave a violent relationship, the questions that I'm asking myself, what's better, to be in a violent relationship with a roof over my head or to be homeless with young children? They're the choices. They're not very good choices at all. And I think there would be nobody, really, when they think about it that deeply, nobody would want to be in that situation. But that is the reality because there is insufficient housing available.
So what do you think? I'd love to know your thoughts. What are you surprised by? What are you interested in? What are you curious about? Just jump on Instagram. You can find the post with Sharon there. Just drop a comment in there and just let me know. If you find this episode useful, if you found this offering some perspectives you might not have considered, please do share it with someone. I'd ask that it doesn't cost you anything to do. Just hit the little arrow in the corner and send it off to somebody or post it in a comment or whatever. Send it to a mate and please do like and subscribe and follow and whatever you can. If you are going to pass through Melbourne at all between the 28th of March and the April the 9th, we are playing at the Melbourne International Comedy Festival. Once again, NTNN, NNN makes their triumphant return. It's a lot of fun. It's a daily news show. No one's going to give me the fake news show of my dreams, so I made one. And so we make like a version of a television show every day about the news of the day. It's the full thing. I make no money. In fact, I lose money, but it's fucking fun and I can't not do it because it's super cool. There's special guests every night. Every single show is different. The tickets are available right now. And if the news at the moment is making you feel a little unhinged, well, come and get the news from people that will make you laugh. While we talk about some heavy, heavy shit. There's also a link to the newsletter that you can sign up to right there, which I should say in just a few short weeks, only not long, we're just wrapping it up now, there's going to be some tasty treats for your ear holes, something to pour into your ear canals that you will only get if you're on the newsletter. So get on that, get on that. Back with Sharon in a minute.
If you're struggling to lose weight, you've probably heard about weight loss medications like Wegovy or Zepbound, and you might be wondering if they're right for you. Meet PlushCare, a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. If you qualify, they can safely prescribe you medication from the comfort of your own home. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss. plushcare.com/weightloss.
Quality sleep is essential. That's why the Sleep Number Smart Bed is designed for your ever-evolving sleep needs. Need a bed that's firmer or softer on either side? Helps you sleep at a comfortable temperature? Sleep Number Smart Beds let you individualize your comfort, so you sleep better together. J.D. Power ranks Sleep Number number one in customer satisfaction with mattresses purchased in-store. And now, save 40% on the Sleep Number Limited Edition Smart Bed for a limited time. For J.D. Power 2023 award information, visit jdpower.com/awards. Only at Sleep Number stores or sleepnumber.com.
When we talk about domestic violence and violent relationships, the numbers are staggering when you look at which way the graphs are going. Is there any work that you've done that tries to identify the causes of these things or where these things might be coming from or why they seem to be getting worse?
There's a lot of pressures on people and there are, in some communities, it's almost seen as that, you know, they get stressed, men get stressed. And like, domestic violence is not just exclusively affecting women, but the overwhelming majority are women who are affected by it.
Yeah.
And talking about the report that we did, we saw a 30% increase in people, women coming to us when they were experiencing domestic and family violence. We've got a number of programs in Mission Australia, and some of them are geared towards men who have been offenders who've caused domestic and family violence. There's a great program that we're running in regional New South Wales in Dubbo, and it's working with men who are the perpetrators and trying to change their behaviour and get them to understand that actually what you think is normal and okay, it's not okay. So there's a lot to do in terms of the education side as well.
In my job, I have had the great fortune, started in radio when I'd be on the phones all the time, and I'm a curious person, so to find out and spend time with people from all over the country. And I've been flabbergasted, to be honest, at some of the things I've heard men who are in their 20s, mid-20s, say amongst each other, and it being completely unchallenged and be completely normal. And I look at these guys and like, I don't think you're doing that because you particularly feel that way. You just don't know that it's really not okay.
You don't know
that it's really not okay because no one anywhere near you has told you it's not okay. So now suddenly when the cops show up and whatever, like, well, of course you're surprised.
you just want to slap around a bit. There's nothing wrong with that.
Well, that's
crazy. That's what I was talking about, behavioral attitudes.
Yeah.
And it's crazy. But actually families have been reconciled through going through those behavioral workshops. Unbelievable, but it actually does happen. And so, right, whether it's an education campaign, whether it's advertising, building awareness, there's a lot more that can be done so that men know, and we're talking generally about men, it's not okay.
No.
And that is not the norm to be doing that.
No.
And sadly, it's also for women to understand it's not okay what's happening to them until they feel so scared that they're in such a life-threatening situation that they then take the decision to leave. And some of them, they're leaving, they're just walking out the door. They don't have their phone, their charger, their ID documents. Like, there's so many things.
Yeah.
And they're not going to get back in the house if the husband's there or the partner ready to sort of have another go when they come back. So that's why education for men, education for women, they're both important.
If it's some people become homelessness, that has no fault of them. Their child, it's got absolutely nothing to do with them, but they are the ones that are going to bear the biggest brunt. What can an outcome look like for someone who, for example, found themselves homeless under the age of 10? What can their life look like with great intervention? What's the tale that you can tell us about a kid?
Well, because a lot of women and men, even though women are the majority, men are homeless as well, and they have kids with them. And the best outcome really is to be able to find the causes of someone being homeless. And when I say that, it's because of the wraparound services that I talked about earlier, so that we can actually help people. Like, for instance, have they had mental health issues? Have they got addiction problems? Do they just need financial counselling? There are so many things. So if we can help with that and then housing becomes available, what that means is that they've got stability back. It means that a child of 10 who has been homeless can actually go back into the system, the school system, have a stable school, develop normal social relationships. Children wear a lot of the pressure. You know, sometimes we think you're just 10, you don't understand. They do understand.
Oh,
they do. And to be able for them to let go of that stress and that worry, it's almost giving them a normal childhood back. But we know that it's not just about a normal childhood right now. It means this is putting them on a path for the rest of their lives. And the more that we can help families with young kids to get into that position that they're back, stable housing, and those kids, and some of those kids we know, and we've heard stories of lots of people who've come and they've had diverse, you know, really tragic situations that they've had to deal with, and they can blossom. Mm. They can just be really successful people, and those early hardships can actually help them in life, going back to the discussion about resilience as well. Or they can just leave a regular life when they've got, you know, they've got a job, they're part of the community, and they're the things that we, you know, we really want to hope for. But regardless of if it's a man or a woman with kids, for us, the thing that I want to stress most of all is early intervention. Put your hand up if you need help, because the more that you do that and let people know, firstly, a problem shared is a problem halved. And often people who find themselves homeless, they kind of want to pretend it's not really happening to them. They're reluctant to reach out to family or friends. And we would say, just forget your pride. Do that, because family and friends can often provide a lot of support for you. And if that's not available, come to organisations like Mission Australia and come early, and we can work with you on an individual basis to find out what the reasons are for you being in that situation. All of those steps, the sooner the better, is going to help you get a good outcome rather than being on a housing waiting list. So, you know, I talked about the demand for the next couple of decades. You know, across Australia at the moment, I think there's about 224,000 people on the wait list for housing today. It's probably an underestimate of people because there might be many people that aren't even on those lists yet, haven't figured how to get onto them, haven't reached out for help.
Yeah.
And all of these things, we keep going back to, if you want to have a really vibrant community where everybody feels safe, everyone can thrive, then we really have to address this issue, and we don't want it to continue to be the crisis. We want to help people early.
I don't know if this is the work that you've done, but maybe in your experience with Salvos and maybe Mission Australia, but you talk about policy. I'm interested to know about what role NIMBYism has in social and affordable housing, what the misconceptions about that are, and what benefits can actually come to a community with a more diverse socioeconomic makeup.
Mm-hmm. It's a great question because at the moment we really are looking at planning and doing things differently, and it's to try to get a whole of community functioning together with all different types of people in it, as opposed to back in the day, you know, you've all seen the ghettos on TV.
Well, mate, that's why there's parts of Sydney. People go,
Don't go over to that suburb.
Yeah, because people you don't want to go to there. It's like, mate, there's parts of Sydney I don't want to walk through.
Yes,
and people who live there don't want to walk through there. Because in the 80s, they went, this is a great idea. No, it was a terrible idea.
No, it was a really bad idea. So let me talk to you just briefly about a project that we have at the moment, and it's out at Macquarie Park, an estate called Midtown. And what we are doing there...
Just for people who are outside of Sydney, right? Just think of the part of your city where when you drive out of town, my old dad says, there used to be cows there and now there's a Bunnings.
And now there's...
Like, that's that kind of place.
It is. So very much metropolitan Sydney, down the road from Macquarie University, big shopping centre there, vibrant, growing area.
Yeah.
And so they're building a new estate out there. New community estate. It's absolutely going to be beautiful, parks, cafes, a real community feel. But as part of that, whilst there's a lot of private buildings that are going up that will be sold for people, just regular people.
House and land package, billboard.
There's also, we have 950 social homes being developed and 130 affordable homes. And affordable homes are for people who are working or on lower incomes.
Mm.
And it's obviously the rent or the prices are just a bit too high.
Mm.
And so it's a way to sort of provide housing for that group of people as well as people who are in social housing. And what I can say about that is we're just about to open phase one of the social housing, which is 259 apartments.
Wow.
They are absolutely beautiful, state of the art. Anyone would be happy and proud to live there. So they're going to be fully integrated in this community so that nobody has a stigma. Everybody has a right to be there and everybody can enjoy the beautiful parklands and the community facilities that are being put out there. And we have people that will be working there to still provide support for people who need it. That is a very big shift to, like, 40 years ago, 50 years ago, when, as you said, you wouldn't walk down certain streets because the buildings were terrible. The way that it was set up was really not
the
conducive to
the high-rises in
building.
Melbourne, the ones we saw getting locked up during COVID.
Yes. That's tragic.
That's not great.
Tragic. So the way of the future is
so
very
others
much...
others people, doesn't it?
Yeah.
Keeps the stigma and the shame going.
Yeah, it does. So very much the way of the future is integrating all different types of people in communities, and it just brings the benefits out for everybody.
Yeah.
That is a really exciting development, and the plans for the future certainly that we have as a community housing provider, and I know others as well, is to build on that design and make everybody feel welcomed, everybody being a part of the community.
Yeah.
And it just is a completely different story to what we would have seen
and you wouldn't be
all
doing
those
this.
Years ago.
You wouldn't be doing this if the research case wasn't behind it. Like
absolutely.
The research clearly shows this is better outcomes for everybody.
It is. Absolutely. Yeah. It is. And that's so important.
I could talk to you all day. There's a really interesting model of in Utah. I don't know if you know about this, the Utah model where they take the bloke living in the little igloo canopy. And initially it was like, we're not going to play. I was like, no, man. And they, you know, job skills, we're going to shower you up, we're going to get you some new clothes, we're going to give you a house. And then within a year, this person is paying their own rent, working every day, has friends. People don't want to make that choice, but he'd fallen so far down? Because I'm just, as you're talking about it, we spoke about, you know, financial support. If you don't know what you're getting into or what you're signing, and because no one in your life, you might be new to the country. No one's ever, you know, I have, like, it's a gross example, but it is the example I'll give. I had the most horrible tinea. I was about 20. I didn't know what it was. No one had ever, you know, I was living out of home. I didn't know what it was. Nobody I knew. It just hurt. There was no internet. And I went to the doctor with these festering sores. By this point, I couldn't even wear shoes. She's like, that's athlete's foot. That's tinea. I was like, oh. And gave me, like, I'm a smart guy. I'm working, you know, but I just didn't know what it was. And someone just had to tell me, oh, that's what it is. And this is really infected. So you're also going to need some drugs and da da da.
And you can sort it out.
And I sorted it out. That is an example of, like, it's so obvious to everybody else. I just didn't know what it was.
But you know what? Okay, so tinea is an interesting example. But what it does say really clearly is that if you have not been exposed to that before, hadn't had the experience of it, you just need someone
to help
you.
Didn't see anybody else struggling with it.
Exactly. Because no one's going to tell you if they are anyway.
Yeah, it's in their shoes.
But exactly. So it's very the same. Like, how do you hold down if you've never had your own apartment or a place to call your home? How do you know what it's like? How do you know how to budget? How do you know how to be a responsible tenant? And these are all really things, important things for people who have been homeless. You don't automatically inhale deeply and understand all of those responsibilities and requirements of doing that. You need help. And so your example was very easily and very quickly it was solved. So the support provided by us and our teams are such that you actually can learn the skills that you need to learn.
But
they're not just going to magically happen.
And very quickly, if you aren't, if you don't have the financial literacy, because it's, and it's no fault of your own, you may not understand how, like, a payday loan works or what happens if you don't pass the inspection or you can't keep your bond. Or now, if you're operating on income like 30 grand, 40 grand a year, 1500 bucks of a speeding ticket or losing your license or a rego, well, like, that's going to
catastrophic.
Absolutely. Yeah. That is the difference between you being able to put food in your kids' mouths and you living in your car. But the margins for error are so slim, you know, because these economic levers are put in place. So everyone, just pay your bills on time and we won't mess you up. Right. I understand. You want people to do the right thing. So you give incentive to not mess up. But if you don't know that, just because you don't know, that's okay. No, it's no shame to not know. It's so quickly how very rapidly you could just end up in a whole lot of trouble and it cascades from then. As we mentioned before, if you miss a letter or if you are not living here or there, next thing you know, you're getting hauled in for...
Think havoc. This happened to me.
Now you need a lawyer. And now, where are you going to kiss?
I can't afford that. Yeah. Oh, at least maybe I can get legal aid. But, like, you know, it's just exactly great examples why, how easily things can change. And imagine all of those things, like you're just talking about, that imagine the stress.
Yeah.
And the issues caused with that as well.
No, not to mention,
And your family, yourself, your kids.
Yeah. You know what? A box of cask wine makes sense. I don't drink anymore, but I understand why you'd want to numb it out. I absolutely get why you would want those uncomfortable, I definitely drank to try to make uncomfortable thoughts and feelings stop. Absolutely. So I totally understand it, you know, how it can just kind of cohabitate.
But then you also totally understand about the importance of reaching out and seeking help and support, right?
I had to wait until it was
changed, you know, your life.
I got told 14 years before I actually stopped. So people did tell me. I did ignore them. It's not uncommon. It sounds to me that we've got enough resources to feed everyone on the planet right now. We really do. It takes a few shifts with the way our agriculture works, but there's more than enough water and more than enough food for everybody and more, all right? People panic a lot about it, but that's actually, it's just a few efficiencies here and there. We're going to be okay. It sounds to me that in Australia, there's really no reason that anyone should be homeless right now.
I agree completely. And you know what? I think government think the same as well. Now's the time, right? We can talk about what happened yesterday.
What happened yesterday?
Not much in terms of, well, lots of things happened yesterday, but in terms of trying to solve homelessness yesterday and the decades before. But our golden opportunity is now to make things better for the future. And yes, it requires government. It requires organisations like Mission Australia and other community service organisations. It requires help from business. It requires help from philanthropy and fundraising. We haven't even talked about that, but there are a lot of services that we provide that don't even get government funding, but that have great outcomes. All of us working together and trying to address this, there's no reason why we can't solve this problem in Australia and have it to be something of yesterday and not to challenge or to rule our futures. It doesn't need to be that way.
Desperate people do desperate things. And desperate things can sometimes make communities less safe. And then we all start to jump at spiders. And I didn't want to tell you this earlier, but when I was setting up
the studio. Is there a spider near me?
Massive huntsman. It's sitting under my yoga bag.
Okay. I'm not really scared of spiders.
I'm cool. Actually, I'm glad.
Not telling the truth. I hate spiders.
No, it's fine. It's locked away? It found its way. It's in that bag somewhere. Okay. It'll find its way out later. I didn't want to tell you until the end. But desperate people make desperate choices. And desperate choices, desperate things that those desperate people can do, can make communities feel less safe. And then when communities feel less safe, then they feel desperate. And then it just becomes a quagmire. And then, you know, next thing you know, everyone's got barbed wire fences and every kid walking down the street's a suspect. And, you know.
And how can that be good for
all of us?
That's
not good for anybody.
Yeah.
It's not good for anybody. Mm. And trying to make the problem go to a suburb far, far away, that doesn't help either. We all end up paying for it in the end.
We do.
With our public health and, you know, our justice system. So I'm grateful to know that there's people like yourself who are working hard. Yeah. And I'm so sure that there are people in government who really want to do the right thing.
Yep. And we believe they do too.
Yeah.
And that's certainly, you know, as I said earlier, that was one of the things on their platform was to have more housing. Mm. And I guess Anthony Albanese, he talks quite freely about his being brought up in social housing and the tough things that he had to deal with.
Yeah.
So we just need them to keep honouring their commitment, investing more. And we can see a change that will make Australia a fully functioning community and not one that just there are the haves and the have-nots.
Yeah, he's Taylor Swift now. People give him shit. He's like, oh, now you own more than one property and now you're Prime Minister. Blah, blah, blah. Like, come on, which is it?
Yeah.
Can I not?
Yeah.
It's bonkers.
It is.
You talked about using exercise, even in your early career. You talked about using exercise not only to fortify you for the job you were doing, but were you also using it as a way to down-regulate? Were you using it as a way to manage and give yourself the mental resilience to deal with what was happening?
Yeah, absolutely. In my job that I currently do, but I guess in managing life in general, we all need to have resilience. And for me, physical activity is very much about building my health, but resilience, and in particular, my mental health, and ensuring that that's a great outlet for me. If I have that release, it's almost like, okay, I can deal with the day now, whatever the challenges that are thrown at me. And I think some people may underestimate, if you're not, you know, people will look at me and think, oh, you're a gym junkie or you're a bit crazy with what you do. But I think people underestimate the fact that having good physical health does build resilience in you. And I think everybody, if they can get a bit of exercise, it doesn't need to be to
a
the
walk
extremes,
counts.
But a walk, right? So you're outside, you're in the fresh air. So already you're winning.
Yeah.
And then you actually add a bit of activity on that and it really does. If I don't exercise, ask my husband what I'm like.
Audrey would tell you the same thing. He probably wouldn't talk to me. She would be
yeah.
like, just go and train. Just go and throw just a kettlebell around. Get on, get on your bike.
Go.
Go.
Yes. Yeah.
There's a lot to be – I've been exploring this a bit on this show. Exercise is I understand why they sold it this way, but selling exercise is a thing you do for an aesthetic result. I think it's given the general public a great disservice because there are hormones and neurotransmitters that get released only through a certain level of activity that allow you to shift mood states easier. They allow you to sleep better. They allow you to calm down quicker. Mm. They allow you to have a bit more space before you shout at someone.
Mm.
And that comes from exercise. Mm. And it's a great thing to go through your day with. As we just mentioned, if I don't, I get cranky. But I think it's sold as if like, this is how you get your six pack and this is how you get your bikini body.
Yep.
Well, this is how you actually, and this is how you keep your bone density, because I'm 50, how you keep your bone density, how you live longer, how you make sure your hormones are released properly.
It's how you live a better life.
And
right?
Also, I find it as well, it helps me process problems. I Both of my folks were doctors. I know what they saw every day at work. If you're working in operating theatre, like, not everybody lives through surgery. Everything's got risks. Some people, sometimes you try to save the leg, you can't save the leg. Sorry.
Yeah.
You're going to lose an eye. Like, you can't make this scar on your face from the accident. You can live the rest of your life with looking like a Bond villain. Like, this is, and that's hard, you know, to go home to. And what's wrong with you? Both my parents would have to do that when they came home. They never exercised. Unfiltered cigarettes and alcohol was my dad's way out.
Another approach.
not sustainable. But there is something, there's no problem that I've ever had when I get on the bicycle or back when I used to run that I didn't come back with a solution for or no thing that I didn't feel just better about after a run.
So there's two things I would say on that. And firstly, sometimes I will be mulling over a problem and I'll go for a run or a ride or a swim. And by the time I come back, sometimes I don't even know how I got back. Like, I'm in such a zone that I think, oh my gosh, I'm back here already. So for me, that's pretty special to be able to do that. I mean, you need to be sort of deep in thought. You've got a very sort of deep conversation with you about it. But that actually happens to me, which is incredible. And I think the other thing is what you were saying earlier about it's being sold wrong.
Yeah.
Because actually, if you actually could say it's all about someone's health and their ability to deal with the day-to-day.
Yeah.
Maybe, I don't know, maybe more people would think about it a bit more seriously.
And it doesn't have to, you don't have to look like.
You don't have to be an Arnie.
You don't have to be, even though I'm a big fan of the way he has been speaking in the last couple of years. He's real honest about, you know, I've had three bypasses from the you know, he talks about the effect on his body that doing all the gear has done to him.
Yeah.
Yet it's very clear how, I don't know if you watched the documentary, but he's
no, it's on my list.
He is.
I think it's really
He's
good.
Not David Beckham's T-shirt drawer. Have you seen that one?
The Beckham one?
Yeah.
So, yeah,
he's not David Beckham's T-shirt drawer level, but he's like, I have a picture in mind of what I want to do, and I'll just put the processes in the place to do it and not let anything get in the way.
Right.
It's like, okay.
Okay, well, he's on my list. I have seen Robbie Williams' one.
I had to stop watching it.
Did you?
Yeah.
Wow. Tell me why. I know you're interviewing me, but
I'm about 25 days away from being 14 years sober, and some of the footage, because we are the same age, he and I, some of the footage of the era, it was a bit, you know, brought a bit too much back.
A bit raw, close to home.
Yeah, it was a bit, far out. Yeah. And so, that's kind of, I like the way they did it. He's just sitting on his bed in his undies watching it.
Yeah, I'm not sure about the undies bit, but that's him,
that's
right?
That's his thing.
Yeah.
I found it a bit tough. Because I truly convinced myself I was having the best time ever. Mm. And, you know, when I think about it now, it was just really quite destructive coping.
But that's amazing. Nearly 14 years.
Nearly 14 years, yeah.
Wow, that is incredible.
Mate, it's
we've taken a lot of hard work for that too.
Yeah, but it's only hard work a day. It literally is. It's a day at a time. Sometimes it's an hour at a time.
Yeah.
And sometimes it's 5 minutes at a time. And those 5 minutes are filled with a phone call. In the early years, I got really sick as well. I went through all kinds of mental health problems. I've experienced psychosis and all kinds of shit. If I was still drinking, forget it. I wouldn't be here.
I'd be dead.
I'd be dead. Absolutely. Because I would have got the fuckets and that would have been it.
Yeah.
But thank goodness I had the skill set of getting sober when I got really sick because I had all the things I knew how to do before you do anything dumb, pick up a phone and check it with someone else's brain.
Yeah.
Some days I'd call 20 people in a day and they'd all go, no, that's okay, well, I trust you.
Yep.
And my doctor, I've got an appointment to see him in 2 days. It's the earliest I can get in. I'm going to go.
And you're going to be there.
Yeah, I'm going to be there. So I know, I make a plan, get check about it with someone else and just don't do anything.
Yeah.
Don't do anything.
And was physical activity for you part of your
It
journey
was until
for
it wasn't. It was until it wasn't. Like I ignored a lot of red flags. Like, I ignored when I was no longer able to downregulate.
Yeah.
When I was no longer able to calm myself down and when the running wouldn't work anymore, that I didn't go and get help, even though I really, really should have.
Mm-hmm.
I didn't. I thought I could still handle it. I thought that I'd be I'd always been all right. Yeah. I would run. I'd see shit on the road and whatever, and I'd kind of shout stuff. It's Venice Beach. People are doing that anyway.
Absolutely.
And it would be okay for about 20 minutes, half an hour, maybe sometimes an hour after my run, but then it'd be just as bad. So I really, that was a massive thing that I know now. I reverse engineered the whole thing. You know, I was very particular about it. And so there's a few flags that go back to, like, now it's like if I get three nights in a row where I'm kind of like having interrupted sleep, waking up less than 5 hours continuously, I call my doctor.
Yeah.
That's it. Because I know.
You know the one. What the happens, red flags.
What happens right. Next? I might think I'm fine. I might convince I'm fine. How many espressos can I take today? I'll be all right. I know that if it's, that's a symptom of something else that I can't yet realize. But I know that. I'm lucky to know that. There's a lot of people that don't realize because it feels real. It feels real. And if you've never understood that your brain can feed you bad information and you're acting on delusion, of course the world's terrifying. And anyone that tells you otherwise, well, they're in on it. I've been there.
Out of it, yeah.
It's terrible.
Yeah.
Terrible. To close it out, look, International Women's Day, I mean, it should be every day, like Valentine's Day. You know, my eldest, she's 20, and I can see her cohort, her generation, they are very proactive, very forward-thinking people. They're very aware of their own power. They're very, certainly, the kids that she hangs out with, they're very aware of their own agency and very aware of their worth. What can... For example, younger women, 20 up to, 30-something, how can those women help the 72-year-old that you mentioned earlier? What can those women do to advocate for, with their skill set of being able to speak up in a way that other generations may not have, purely because of the systems they grow up in? What can women like that do to help those older women?
Well, I think firstly what you were talking about, they do have a voice and they're... I was going to say they're strong voices and generally they're not afraid to use them. We need to be more courageous in terms of speaking out. So with International Women's Day coming up on the 8th of March, there'll be lots of morning teas and there'll be lots of high-fiving and celebrating about how great it is, how far we've come. So that's great because it's an opportunity to highlight things. But I think we need to be careful thinking that the answer is not just in having lots of morning teas and doing that. That's the start because it builds awareness. So your daughter and her friends and women everywhere and men as well, because they're helping to solve the problem as well, is actually it's using their voice. It's being courageous. It's about speaking up and saying the way things are at the moment is not okay. We need to accelerate progress. That's one of the themes of International Women's Day. Let's get the 21.1%, or actually it's closer to 22% wage gap. Let's get rid of it. And there we are monitoring that, but let's accelerate progress. Let's absolutely do that. Let's make sure that the women don't always have to be overwhelmingly the majority of people who are on low incomes.
Yeah.
Fixing those kind of structural problems will actually help for the longer term. Your eldest, so there's a lot she can do in terms of using her voice, and it's advocating to government as well, but it's they can also reach out to organisations like Mission Australia. We've got over 1,000 volunteers as it is. We're always looking for people who can volunteer and, as I said earlier, who can fundraise as well to help us with the areas that we're not funded. So there are a myriad of things to do. What they need to do is they need to be willing to put their hands up and they need to speak out and have a courageous voice. And amongst us all and with the men as well, we can make the change that we want to see to make Australia the best community that it can be.
Yeah. If we do see, today, people driving usually when they listen to this, if you do see someone who's, homeless or they can see someone who's kind of struggling a bit, what's a reframe question that we might be able to ask ourselves when we look at them?
Well, we don't look at them and think, gee, I wish you'd get out of the way because you're in my way of getting into the supermarket. It's actually thinking, how did this happen? How did this person get to be this way, and what can we be doing as a community to help them? And, often kneel down, sit beside them, say hello, say, how are you going? We've got a guy in our local supermarket. He's there all the time. I know who he is. I know his name. For whatever reason, he doesn't want to leave. He doesn't want to change his life, but he does love having a chat and make them feel human and just find out if there are things that you can do to help.
Yeah.
And I think maybe people sometimes are afraid to approach people and just think, just lose that. Just think, actually, what can I do to help?
Yeah. So lovely to have you. Thanks for your patience earlier when all the chaos was happening. When
I was loving it. Thank you. Thank you so much for having me.
That was Sharon Callister. If you do want to support her work, you can support Mission Australia however you choose to do so. Thank you so much for being here. Thanks for being a part of it. Thank you to Andy Ma, who did audio and video post, Abby Benno, my producer, Toe Hider, who made all the music, Monica and Ben for keeping the lights on at OGTV. And on Friday, we are back here for NTNN NNN. For the weekly news update, you can get tickets to our live shows in the show notes. See you around.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Cats and cat owners deserve better than any old-fashioned litter. That's why I teamed up with scientists and veterinarians to create Pretty Litter. Its innovative crystal formula has superior odor control and weighs up to 80% less than clay litter. Pretty Litter even monitors health by changing colors to help detect early signs of potential illness. It's the world's smartest kitty litter.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Support for this podcast and the following message come from Corient. Corient provides wealth management services centered around you. They focus on exceeding your expectations and simplifying your life. Corient has been helping high achievers just like you enjoy their lives more fully, preserve their wealth, and provide for the people, causes, and communities they care about. As one of the largest integrated fee-only registered investment advisors in the U.S., Corient has deeply experienced teams in 23 strategic locations. Corient has extensive knowledge spanning the full spectrum of planning, investing, lending, and money management disciplines. Leverage Corient's exclusive network of experts to craft custom solutions designed to help you reach your financial goals, no matter how complex they may be. Real wealth requires real solutions. For more information, connect with a wealth advisor today at Corient.com. That's Corient.com. Corient.com.